Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. All right, picking up on a topic that's not always easy to talk about, especially in the light, as I said earlier, given the assassination of Charlie Kirk. But it ought not to be. We ought to be able to talk openly and honestly about these issues, because there are policies that we're dealing with. This issue is one that the Montana Family Foundation has focused on as an advocacy organization, and that is Title IX in Montana. It did go under the Biden administration from, it's a pendulum swing over in the last few years, as a matter of fact, far to the left side on one aspect. And then now with President Trump in office, he has rescinded some of those by executive order. Jeff Laszlofy again with the Montana Family Foundation. For more information, it is montanafamily.org. Jeff, good morning, sir. Thanks for coming on. How are you doing lately?
I'm doing well, and thanks for having me.
I appreciate you being here, and I know it's difficult in the light of given the past few days here, because Charlie Kirk was someone who supported your program.
Yeah, and Charlie was actually a good friend, personal friend. Yeah, we've got some good memories, and he was a strong advocate for social conservative issues from a Judeo-Christian perspective. That is who he was at his core.
And it was so good to see someone with so much courage in talking with young kids about these issues. And I really think our youngsters have responded to that amount of honesty. What would you say, Jeff? I know we'll talk about some of these other things, but what would you say, Jeff, was the appeal of Charlie Kirk?
I think that if you can engage in honest dialogue, I think that it doesn't matter what side of, an issue you come down on. If you can actually engage with somebody and stop for a second and listen to what they're saying and then respond accordingly with an intelligent response. And I'm actually thinking of myself right here. Back when I used to serve in the legislature, I used to regularly go to dinner with the head of Planned Parenthood, and who was also a legislator, and the head of the ACLU. And we honestly, the head of the ACLU and I honestly tried to find something out there that we agreed on. And we finally did. We both agreed that we liked bluegrass music. Beyond that, there was nothing we agreed on, but we had civil discourse. And I find now that some of the young lobbyists that are up at the legislature are venomous, basically, for lack of a better word. And you just literally cannot talk to them. And the problem is that they confuse the term hate with simply the term disagreement. If you don't agree with them on an issue, then they automatically lump you into the hate category. You hate us because you don't agree with us. Well, that's silly. You and I think that's silly, but that is actually the reality of their world, and it makes civil discourse extremely difficult.
I appreciate that, because there's a lot of labels, and fascism is one of them, right? And xenophobia and racist, and people are throwing these labels out there in as you noted, a venomous way. They don't mm-hmm. even have to apply to anything. So we're hoping that course can change. We need that course to change, because as you and I just kind of chatted briefly, going on before the show, it's messy undoing bad policy. And if we don't have honest discussion and honest data, we don't have honest good policy. And this is one of the things that you guys are now working on. Talk about this letter that you sent as you're working with Montana schools to, right-size, I guess, a policy, in my mind, right-size a policy from the previous administration and executive order. So this rolls some of those rules back with the Department of Education. Why don't you tell us what they are, Jeff?
Yeah, so we've actually been working the issue since the Obama administration, when he sent out his Dear Colleague letter that redefined sex versus gender and how they were going to deal with, with those two terms. And that actually went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And President Trump, during his first administration, rescinded the Obama ruling or executive order, basically, is what it was. And so the court just rendered the point moot and didn't move on. Then the Biden administration came in and they changed the definition to say that sex means gender, not biological sex, but the way someone identifies. And so that opened up an entire can of worms, especially for schools that had to navigate this whole of, you know, do we or do we not allow boys into girls' restrooms, locker rooms? We had a case up in northwestern Montana where a boy was on a school field trip, was forced to sleep in the same bed as a female who identified as a boy. And to his credit, he said, "I'm just not doing that." And he slept in the bathtub. But we've been receiving more and more complaints from parents over the years about these types of things going on in schools. And when we contact the school administrators, we get one of two responses. Some are extremely sympathetic and they say, you know, we want to do the right thing, but our hands are tied because of the definitions in Title IX. And others, I believe, are just using the definition in Title IX to push an agenda that they believe in to begin with. So, when President Trump came back into office, one of the first things he did was sign an executive order that dealt with all of this and the way we're going to look at sex versus gender. And he just said from now on, the federal government and all policies across the board is going to treat the term sex as biological sex, not the way someone identifies. So this affects schools, it affects the military, it affects a lot of things. So when he did that, then they also came in, and as a matter of policy, they went back to the original definition as passed by Congress years and years ago, back in the 70s, about Title IX and how we would define sex. And they went a step further, and they said, listen, we mean this with regard to schools. And so they created a task force, three task forces, one in the Department of Justice, one in the Department of Health and Human Services, and one in the Department of Education, to go after schools that were non-compliant. So if a school is still living in the woke world of boys get to go into girls, you know, restrooms and locker rooms, they are now subject to disciplinary action and possible defunding of the federal dollars that flow into that school. And this wasn't an empty promise. They actually went after five school districts in Northern Virginia and placed those guys on kind of a temporary status where all of their federal dollars have to be prepaid by the school district, and then they have to go to the federal government and ask for a reimbursement rather than those funds just flowing naturally to the schools like they had in the past. And then they went after the school district down in the Denver school district and disciplined that school district as well in terms of funding. And they're going after other school districts right now that have not reached resolution yet, but all across the United States. So they're serious. So the Montana Family Foundation simply sent out a letter this week to school principals, school administrators across the state of Montana, and also superintendents and trustees, and said, listen, we just want to make sure that you know what the current policy is in case you get a complaint from a parent so that you don't risk your federal dollars that flow into the schools. And so we, our chief legal counsel wrote the letter and included all of the citations to all of the different policy areas that affect the schools. Mm-hmm. And we sent that out. And we also sent a copy to the Montana School Boards Association and to the Office of Public Instruction. We know that they know what the current policy is, but we just want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. And now if we get a complaint from a parent about a school that's still not compliant, we're going to call the school and say, just wanted to make sure you saw the letter, just want to make sure that you know what the new definitions are and that you're out of compliance. And if they still refuse to come into compliance, then we'll just take it a step further and just, you know, make the task forces aware that this school just is refusing to adhere to you know, the current public policy and let them handle it at that point.
How ingrained are those policies in our schools that make it difficult to unwind them?
Well, in the case of the Denver school district, they simply took all their bathrooms and made them gender neutral, all of them. And so there was no place that a student could go. that didn't want to be around students of the opposite sex potentially. And so how do you unwind that? Well, you simply go back to putting a sign on one bathroom that says men or, you know, boys, and the other that says girls. It's not that hard to unwind that. The other thing is, we have a good friend of ours that serves in the Montana legislature currently that's a former high school teacher. And I was mentioning this to him, and he said, oh, my gosh. He said, one day I was using the restrooms in the boys' locker room and using the urinal, and in walks a girl. And there was nothing, he knew there was nothing he could do because of the policy of the school. And so he quickly exited because the problem was twofold. First of all, you know, he didn't want to be in a restroom with a member of the opposite sex. Second, he's an adult alone in a restroom with a female student. And this is the lunacy that's being accepted by the school districts right now, and not all of them. There's a lot of good educators out there, and that's the reason that we're doing what we're doing. We want to give them cover so that the policies that they know, that are not what the parents want, can be undone. And, you know, it's really literally not that hard to undo it. There are lots and lots of school districts that have found workarounds for these types of things. So we just need to go back to the adults being adults in this situation and treating the situation, you know, fairly with respect to especially female students. But this is about the health and safety of students all across the board. And there's lots of cases now working their way through the federal courts where we've had, boys go into girls' locker rooms and harass girls. We've had guys on female sports teams that are just taking positions away from girls that those girls have fought for years to get to certain levels, and that's affecting these girls' ability to get, college scholarships and move on. It's just literally not fair.
No.
It's the reason that Title IX was implemented, and it's time that we go back and create a level playing field for boys and girls so that they can all succeed.
Jeff Laszlofy with the Montana Family Foundation. So logistically then, it might not be hard to kind of backtrack on some of these policies, but culturally is sort of a different aspect of it. And you, that's something that is in your wheelhouse as well. So have you seen pushback? Have you had to respond to questions about discrimination against transgender students? And what is your response?
Yeah, so I think, is there pushback? Absolutely. You saw it in the last election cycle. I think people are tired of an agenda being pushed down their throats that literally makes no sense. You cannot change a boy into a girl. You cannot do that.
The DNA
understand, is always going to say boy.
Culturally, what do you see culturally? How ingrained is this gender confusion culturally with especially our youngsters, Jeff?
Well, it's ingrained because the schools have been pushing it, but it's not ingrained in when people, like I said, go back to the election. People saw these crazy policies being pushed top down by the federal, beginning at the federal level and being pushed down into the schools. This is not something that's bottom up. This is top-down federal policy, and the fact that President Trump has stepped up and said, we're not going to play this game anymore in the military or in the schools, I think is being well-received. It's not being well-received, obviously, by some people on the left, but it's being well-received by the vast majority of Americans that just believe in truth and biological reality, and we're just not playing this game anymore. So we'll see how it plays out. These are the big cultural and policy issues that cannot be solved in a day. And the left has had its heyday with this issue and run far with it. But now you're seeing the pushback and we find a champion in President Trump.
Returning to the White House, the president has issued some executive orders for the Department of Education, guidance rolling back some Biden-era policies on gender identity in schools. And this is a key one, reinstating sex-based definitions of male and female under Title IX. How are our schools responding? As Jeff Laszlofy had said earlier, there's kind of a whipsaw going back and forth. You go back to the Biden administration and their stretch on policies that I would say have violated people's values when it comes to gender identity and redefined sex. That was recalled by the U.S. Supreme Court. But there was no definitive ruling on that. The Trump administration rescinded those. That's what went to court. Then the Biden administration kind of reinstated those and doubled down on some policies where they, as a matter of fact, threatened. They were threatening schools. Your administration was threatening schools to take their funding away. Yes, that's what happens. The Trump administration is doing the same thing. Nearly 80% of school districts receive some form of federal education funding. How much? Again, that depends on the school district. In Montana, we rely an awful lot on federal funding. Title IX is at issue here, as we're back on the air here from Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana, and Jeff Laszlofy joins us from the Montana Family Foundation. Jeff, I appreciate you joining us here today to talk about this. As I noted, we're looking for civil discourse to increase in this country, but there are people that have expressed a lot of concern over some of these policies and of course, our discourse. We've noted the assassination of Charlie Kirk and other violent acts that have really, really made it difficult here. We're going to take a quick call, Jeff. And again, thanks for being here. Chris is listening in Columbia Falls. And Chris, thank you for joining us. I know you've got some statements you want to make in this regard.
Yeah, thanks. Real quick here, the point that he's making as well, it seems like he wants to do a lot of something, you know, to help the nation and especially in the schools. You know, Solzhenitsyn, he came to this country and he says to destroy a people, you first must sever their roots. And that's what they're attempting to do in the educational system. You know, the secularization of America through the doctrine of pluralism is sad. So when it comes to the schools, if they want to teach things like socialism, you know, and inject it in there that influence our young people, and it goes against a lot of people who are patriots and understand where this country came. You know, when you're talking about 1620, going back to the Mayflower Compact, you know, this country was formulated on certain principles. You know what I mean? There was no Muslims in this country. There was no Buddhists. There was no Confucianism. There was no Hindu. And certainly, you know, there was no Islam. And these principles were created for a particular people, and these people had value. So that's the ones who made, and that's what we have to go back to. So if you want to do something in the system, and if they don't want to, if they stop teaching young people, you know, the principles of socialism, they don't want a police force, they don't want capitalism, they don't want morality. They there is no absolutes with these people, and you know, even murder, you know, said Lenin, you know, that if you do it in the whole guise of furthering socialism. Now, if they're teaching that,
okay, Chris, I'm gonna take it back here. I'm gonna take it back here. Okay, I appreciate you, delineating some of those issues there as well. And Jeff, I'm just going to have you pick up on some of your thoughts to that as well. Education has certainly been a focal point for change of any agenda, right or left.
Right. And to your caller's point, he mentioned Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Another one of his famous quotes was, if I could say succinctly, I'm paraphrasing, but if I could say succinctly and precisely the cause that resulted in the deaths of 60 million of my countrymen, it would be the fact that we have forgotten God. And I think that's what he was saying. When we turn our back on, especially in the United States, because we were founded as a Judeo-Christian nation, and John Adams said that there's, you know, that our Constitution was written for a moral and religious people and is wholly inadequate to the governments of any other. when we turn our back on these big principles that, you know, that guided the founders, we're treading in you know, dangerous waters. And I think we're beginning to see the fallout from that now.
I appreciate that. And I'll throw this out here, too. And there are other polls that reflect this, even though there may be some in this poll. So 69% of Americans, according to a 2023 Gallup poll, support separate bathrooms and locker rooms by biological sex. They may have other thoughts regarding the treatment of people suffering from gender identity or transgenderism. But by this, it's almost three-fourths, you know, well over two-thirds say let's not complicate this by confusing simple issues. So what do you read in those poll numbers?
Well, so when we deal with public policy, we always have to govern for the majority and try to make accommodations for the minority where it's appropriate. But we don't trample on the majority to accommodate a minority. And I think we've gone even further. I think now we are not simply accommodating the minority. We are trampling the rights of the majority to accommodate a minutia. And that's where we've gotten off the rails on this thing. So what we need to do is go back to the policies that were working for years for the majority and then come up with workarounds. If we've got somebody that, you know, that's identifies as gender dysphoric or identifies as transgender, they could either use the bathroom of their biological sex. But if they're not comfortable with that, schools have said, okay, you're welcome to come in and use the teacher's lounge restroom. Problem solved. It was easy. We don't need to completely turn the system on its head to try to accommodate, you know, a minutia, which is literally the number of people that are transgender in the United States is a minutia.
Yeah. It is very, I like how you put that. I mean, it is a very small number, and we are making very large policy decisions for that accommodation. So what role then do parents play to ensure, that these rules are followed, but also in guiding their children? I have complained we're running all these social issues, we being probably a majority of organizations, but it seems like we're running social issues through our public education system, and we're coming out on the other side of that confused.
Yeah, and I think it starts in our colleges of education on university campuses. I think those are a hotbed of liberal thought, liberal ideology, and that's being transmitted to students that are preparing to become teachers, and then it just flows down naturally into the schools. You said, what can parents do? With respect to this issue that we're talking about earlier today, one thing that they can do is they can go to our website at montanafamily.org. That's all spelled out, montanafamily.org. And they can download a copy of the letter that we sent to the schools so they can see the logic that flows through that and where the federal policy has been implemented in school districts around the United States. And if they hear of an instance in their local school where the school is non-compliant, then they can go to the school principal. They can show them that letter and say, hey, you know, did you see this? So that's one thing that parents can do. The other thing is that parents can teach their children always to be respectful to everyone so that we begin to teach civil dialogue at a very young age, but at the same time, not to kowtow and bow to values and principles that we know to be wrong just to avoid conflict. If we do that, we lose by default.
I've seen some disturbing legislation state level on both coasts regarding parental notification and a move to deny parents knowledge that their student is being transitioned at school. Mm-hmm. What's the reality behind those things?
Well, California's gone even further than that. California's now got legislation that says if you're not willing to let your kid transition, then they can become a ward of the state.
Yeah.
They can literally take your child away from you because you won't go along with what the child wants to do.
That's why this battle is so important, Jeff. It really is.
Because this is, like I said, we are treading in very, very, very dangerous waters right now.
So that's going on, right? Is it just those crazy leftists from California? Or, you know, somebody's...
It's going on right here in Montana. Now, fortunately, the legislature and the governor are on the right page, and they have passed so many bills dealing with this to protect kids and to protect parental rights. And then, unfortunately, the ACLU or Planned Parenthood or whoever, Montana Pride, will sue. And lo and behold, it winds up in the courtrooms over in Missoula, and all those judges over there are the most liberal judges basically in the state of Montana, and they nullify the legislation, and they just said, no, this is unconstitutional, and we're not going to abide by it, which is the beauty of what we're doing with this letter that's gone out to the schools now, because this does an end run around the Montana court system. There's no action that a school can file in a Montana court to demand that the money coming from the federal government be given to them, even if they're non-compliant. It's outside of their hands. And that's the reason we think this is going to be so effective in correcting the non-compliant schools in the state.
Jeff Laszlofy again with the Montana Family Foundation, montanafamily.org. What else is on your plate? I mean, this is good. This is an important topic, that's for sure. And we'll continue to follow it here as well, no matter what. We'll be honest about this. What else is on the plate for you? So we got just a couple minutes here.
Right now, we have a lawsuit pending to overturn CI 128, the abortion amendment that was on the last ballot that people voted on. It won by a significant but not overwhelming majority. But the problem is that so many people had no idea what that did. The language in the initiative itself said that it was abortion up to viability. But in practice, in the way when you take case law and apply it to the language that they use, and they were very smart, it allows for abortion up to the moment of birth. And people didn't know that. So we have filed a lawsuit. State has agreed to hear it. And we're moving forward with that. We're hoping to overturn it, not on the abortion policy, but on the fact that the way that the ballot initiative process has been tweaked over the years no longer conforms to the language of the Constitution, and we need to reinstate the ballot initiative process in a constitutionally sound manner.
We talked with your legal counsel, Derek Astreicher, about that a while back and made a very strong case, as a matter of fact, and maybe it's a technicality in some people's view, but the Supreme Court has already kind of upheld a similar ruling regarding defense of that ballot language. So, and let me ask you this. I got one minute on this one too. Supreme Courts are reticent to take cases that just entirely involve a state. Do you think this one will have to go a little higher, and will they take it?
That's a challenge. The short answer, nobody knows. You never know. 2,000 cases a year go up to the Supreme Court, and they accept about 70 of them. So the odds are not good to have a case jump onto the federal level and go to the Supreme Court. But, you know, we're not going to give up, and we don't want parents to give up either. Good. If they would just, on this issue, if they would just, you know, just download that letter, if they see anything going on, they can always call us. You mentioned Derek Astreicher, our chief legal counsel. He used to be the chief deputy attorney general for the state of Montana. He was number two at the Department of Justice. So he's no lightweight. And we'll go in, and the first thing we'll do is say to the schools, you know, we just want you to know what the current policy is so that you don't run afoul of the federal government and its funding mechanism.
Yeah.
That's one big thing people can do.
Well, that's good. And that's kind of how we do things in Montana, too. Hey, did you know about this? And then, Jeff, I appreciate this. I appreciate the way you guys are handling some of these faith, family, and freedom issues. And find out more, montanafamily.org for more information. We'll be following, okay, Jeff?
Sounds good. Thanks, Tom.
All right, take care.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.